Thank you, Brother LaVon, and I love how the Holy Spirit of God, we must have the same Father, puts things together, because he was in Virginia last week when I started this series, but that song goes very, very well with part two that we are going to hit today. Gospel of John, chapter 13. And we're going to begin there, but as way of review, and I love these little pins, these little clothespins that are going around. If you happen to see a little, you get pinned, I understand you're supposed to pass it on to somebody. So I'll have to pass it on, so I'll put it up here. And I wanted to explain it before you could see it. Figured the folks online might need to know why I was wearing a clothespin on my tie today. But the little clothespin simply says, WWJD, what would Jesus do? And it looks like this one might have some hearts or something on it. And some of our young people apparently have made them, and they're running around passing them saying, pin it to somebody else to remind them of what would Jesus do. You know, just that one phrase. If we could just take that one phrase and live by it, it would change us. I mean, it would change our world. It would change our churches. We wouldn't have enough room to put everybody. And it would really change things. And last week, we started a series on how's your service. And I asked you kind of jokingly, and I know some do work at McDonald's, and I was joking with them about that, but are you a McDonald's type Christian or a Chick-fil-A type Christian in service? And everybody understood what I meant about the difference in service there when you go places. I went not long ago to a place, an unnamed establishment, to get a sweet treat, ice cream. My wife wanted ice cream one night. And I looked down, and of course, Google knows everything about where ice cream is, right? I mean, if it's, you know, talk about service. You ask Google, and they'll tell you where it's at. Ask Amazon. They said, we just put it on the counter for you, you know? But we went, and we found this place that had ice cream, and we finally chose a flavor, and I knew it was about 30 minutes before the establishment would be closing. Well, I thought that was plenty of time, and I guess it was, but I guess they were kind of ready to go home, and they were already cleaning up when I got in there. And you know what? I got in there, and they didn't have any of the Sunday stuff, the chocolate. And it made me laugh, because it was our fault. We went late. I understood that. We were there late, but it was funny because they didn't have any of the chocolate syrup for it. And I left, but you know what? I kind of wanted chocolate syrup on it, you know? Well, it kind of made me laugh, really, and I'll go back at some point, but it makes you wonder, when you treat people, are you treating them like Jesus would? And how's your service? Because people remember how they're treated, and Brother Billy said this many years around here before, they'll remember anything else. John chapter 13, he gives us the greatest illustration. When we started this series, and there are times in your life when you need healing, you are hurting, and we're going to ask you, how's your service in that? But I don't think we're going to have time to get there today. We'll save that for September. But in chapter 13, in verse number 1, we find, now that before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour was come, that he should depart out of this world unto the Father, having loved his own which were in the world, he loved them unto the end. And supper being ended, the devil having now put into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and that he was come from God and went to God, he riseth from supper and laid aside his garments and took a towel and girdeth himself. After that, he poureth water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel wherewith he was girded. Then cometh he to Simon Peter, and Peter saith unto him, Lord, shalt thou wash my feet? And Jesus answered and said unto him, what I do thou knowest not, but thou shalt know hereafter. Peter saith unto him, thou shalt never wash my feet. Jesus answered him, if I wash thee not, thou hast no part with me. Simon Peter saith unto him, Lord, not my feet only, but also my hands and my head. Jesus said unto him, he that is washed needeth not to save to wash his feet, but he is clean every whit, and ye are clean, but not all. For he knew who he should be, betray him, and therefore he said, ye are clean, but ye are not all clean. So after he washed their feet and had taken his garments and was set down again and said unto them, know ye what I have done to you? You call me Master and Lord, and you say, well, for so I am. If I then, your Lord and Master, have washed your feet, ye ought also to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example that you should do as I have done to you. Verily, verily, which means emphasis on it, it's important. I say unto you, the servant is not greater than his Lord, neither is he that sent greater than he that sent him. If ye know these things, happy are ye if you do them all. Now, I'm going to stop there for a while. And I want to talk about this thing called service. What does it mean? When we talk about service, how is your service? Is he really concerned that you go around with a towel and a bucket and you wash everybody's feet? I hope not, because a lot of feet stink. I one time, and I'll never forget, and I hope not to embarrass him. I don't think it will. But Brother Danny Wood, we were doing a play called the Lord's, I think it was about the Lord's Supper kind of thing. We were doing, it's called Is It I? And during the thing, the whole time, you know, there's Jesus and 12 disciples, and you're all asking the question, Is It I? It was great. And but I'll never forget, Brother Danny, the night that we first did that, came in and brought a towel and a bucket, or, you know, pail. I'm from Johnson County now, you know. I grew up in South Georgia, but now I've adopted Johnson County ways. We brought a bucket, you know. And he washed all of our feet before that play. Never had that done before, and it was the most humbling experience I've ever experienced in my life. And I will never forget it. I remember Brother Danny's attitude. He said, if Jesus can do it, I can do it. What would Jesus do? And that, for that moment, was what was needed. Now, I'm not suggesting, and there are denominations who still practice feet washing, like we do baptism. I don't necessarily think it's something we need to do all the time, every time we come to church. There was a place for that particular moment in time, and he taught me a lot through that. But what he is telling them is, I am giving you an example. And we talked about the cup of cold water. We talked about last week, if you just come to church, you're not serving God by coming to church. It's what you're supposed to do. And he says that you've just done your duty at that point. That's not just serving God. What do you do the rest of the week? Can I give you really quickly one thought? You have not because you ask not. You say, well, I don't know how to serve God. Have you asked him? Ask him. He will lead you. He will show you what he wants you to do when you ask him. And we see, first of all, that you serve in high things, and most of us don't have any problem with that. You know, the high up, lifted up things. You know, and you have to be careful with this. There are things in church that you have to do. You have to have preachers. You have to have teachers. You have to have people do those things. I remember, though, and Brother Billy shared this before, but I remember some years ago, this was many, many years ago, and you served not only in the high things, but in the holy things, and I'll continue that thought. The things of God, like taking, you know, doing communion, you know, things like that, that can be considered high things, holy things, and we serve in those areas. Our deacons help do that. And by the way, if you want to know a good study on deacons, you go to the book of Acts and also the Pauline epistles. Sometimes people say, well, the pastor and the deacons run the church. No, we don't. If you think the deacons and the pastor run the church, you don't understand them. We're only here to make sure nobody else runs it. God runs the church. And we're not in charge of that. He's already set that up. That ain't my business. I am not the chef. I'm just the waiter. My job is to get the food to the people and get it there hot. And here we find Jesus is giving us an example. But I remember in the high and the holy things, some people get confused and think, well, that's serving God if I do those things. But they don't want to do the other things. God will never entrust you with high and holy things till you learn how to do the humble things. We serve in humble things. I remember some men years ago who Brother Billy asked, I hope to God none of them are listening. I know one of them's in heaven, so I know what the intercom is like there. But these men wanted to serve God, and they came to Brother Billy, and they asked him, did he have something they could do to serve at that church? And it's been over 30 years, but I remember it. And he said, well, I really need some help. We've just started this little ministry to truck drivers. They didn't even have a name yet. Now we know it as the Highway Shepherd. And he said, this ministry is going to, you know, we're going to put, I got to figure out how to tell some of you. Some of you don't know, I have a clue what I'm talking about. Cassette tapes. Now, you younger generation, that was something you listened to in the car. Or you saw it all over somebody's yard when it got tore up, you know, and the little strings in it came apart. And it had like 2 miles of string in it, you know, tape. But then we went to CDs. Now they're doing a podcast and, you know, USB jump drives and all that stuff for it. But anyway, he said, I need you to go down to the little farmhouse restaurant and a couple of other truck stops who put them in and put these tapes in these for people to pick up. And they came back to him later and said, you don't understand, we want to be involved in real ministry. And, you know, he and I were joking about it the other day. They never did either one. One of them did wind up pastoring for a little while of a church, but it never did do anything. And I thought, and Brother Billy said, I wonder if 30 years later, after, you know, what, a million CDs or something like that, and, you know, we grafted 1 year and we heard from 9 foreign countries and all 50 states with the Highway Shepherd Ministry from January to just March. I wonder if they think it's real ministry yet. Brother Billy and I just met with a military young man who was, you pray for him, he asked us to pray for him. His first name's Emmett. His mom and dad are atheists, but he got saved. He found, he has been listening to Highway Shepherd CDs. He came by, met with Billy. He's taking a whole load of them back to college over in Dahlonega, Georgia, but he'll be coming out as an officer in the Army, wants to be a pilot in the Army, and a very intelligent young man. Really enjoyed meeting him. But, you know, I was thinking, was that real ministry? Had a friend, Dr. Roger Hogle. He actually married Wendy and I. I always have to be careful when I say that. One time, my mouth sometimes gets me in trouble. Probably don't you, but it does me. I was in Home Depot in Florida one time, and I was pastoring down there, and a guy looked at me, and he said, you married my daughter. And I said, no, I married Wendy. She's right here. I didn't want any confusion there, you know. Let's clear that up. And, well, that's how church rumors get started, huh? And but I was joking with him, you know, and he said, no, and he described the place and everything. I, to this day, don't ever remember his daughter. Maybe I've got a lookalike somewhere. I was in an outer body experience when we did the wedding because Wendy didn't remember it either. But I was like, I don't remember that. I don't remember his daughter. I don't remember marrying them or anything. He described the place and everything. And I was like, I don't remember seeing that place in my life. So apparently there's another one looks like me somewhere. Poor fella. And I just remember that. But we were, as I remember, all of that, serving God is not all weddings and funerals and preaching things and all that. But I remember Dr. Hogle, the guy who married us, he's still in ministry, still pastoring the same church. He's been pastoring it over 50 years now. And we actually almost went there, or kind of, we thought about it. Well, I'll say it this way. They were the first church to offer us a position when I was in college still. And they offered us to come be his intern and then help with some student school of tomorrow, be one of his deans and everything. And he had a real reputation for bringing in young preachers and training them, getting them going, and then sending them out. He did a great job with that. Wendy and I never got peace about it. Maybe it was the cold weather. It's only warm there one day a year, and you just pick which one it is and turn the heater up. It's up in West Springfield. They live 15 minutes off of Lake Erie. The other side's Canada. So it was a long way up there. But he would bring these guys in and train them. And the first thing he would do when an intern, a pastoral intern came in, is he would get a little toilet bowl cleaner and a toilet thing. And he'd go down and he'd say, the first thing you got to do today is we need to clean all the gymnasium restrooms and the locker rooms. And some of them would be going, but I'm here, and some of them would, but you don't understand, I'm here for the pastoral internship. And he said, exactly. Till you learn to clean toilets, you'll never make a good pastor. And we have to learn to serve humbly. Jesus here has this group of mob around him, a gang. If you look at the 12 disciples, and I want you to understand, the 12 disciples, over half of them were not what we would call Christians till after the resurrection. They weren't even saved. They didn't know Jesus. One of them had a devil. And we see those photos of them guys, and I told you last week, looking piously on Jesus. They weren't doing that. They were arguing about who was going to be first. Man, we live in such a me-first society. It's get all you can while you get, and sit on the can. You know, that's the mentality. We had my daughter and her husband, Nathan, they went down to Florida this weekend, probably watching this morning possibly, but they went down to Florida to help Grammy and do stuff and around there, which I am so grateful for adult children that can do that, because that meant I didn't have to go. We'll go see her later on in the year here when they can't, but she's probably watching too. She says, there goes your Christmas present, huh? But it's hot down there right away. It probably might be cooler than it is here. I don't know. But she said, Daddy, I always laugh when the plane is boarding. Man, they haven't even unloaded yet. And there's people standing in line to get on the plane. I says, because it's a me-first society. I mean, let's think about it. Getting on an airplane is like going to kindergarten. You have an assigned seat. You know where you're going to sit. You ain't got a choice. Teacher done told you where you sitting. Usually for me, it was in the corner. And she said, they all standing in line. I was like, it's because it's a me-first society. You can even buy the opportunity to get on the plane first so that you can sit there and watch everybody else come on and get your head bapped by their luggage when they come by. I have never understood that. I said, put Wendy in charge of airlines and she would get that thing loaded right and we'd be out of here. But that's what it is. It's a me-first. It's really what it comes down to. I've seen him standing there just patient, you know, pacing, and I'm like, I'm usually the last one on the plane. I've got my ticket. I know where I'm sitting. If somebody's in my seat, they'll make a move. I don't want to sit on there no longer than I have to. I want to be free as long as I can be free, you know. When I get in that thing, I feel like a caged lion. And I'm sitting there, and one day we're going to take Justin on a plane, but when we do that, we're going to have to give him a shot first. He won't... It would be like, Mr. T, Justin, here, try this drink. It's great. You'll love it. But those planes, that's what it is. It's a me-first mentality. And Jesus, by example, he's taking one of the lowest forms of society. While they're arguing, he simply gets up. There would have been, as I told you, dirt on their feet. There might have been some, you know, animal excrement. There might have been some, it was a dirty, third world countries don't have garbage services like we do, and they didn't. There would have been junk in the street. They would have all been sitting under a low table where their feet would be sticking kind of up, and you would have smelled them. They'd have been sitting in close proximity. They didn't have AC. And normally a servant would wash the feet to alleviate some of those things. But Jesus takes a towel, wraps it around him, picks up that bowl, and begins to slowly, methodically go through, you know, comes over to Andrew and puts his foot in. And begins to wash the dirt off his feet. Serve in the hidden things. Here he is. It's something that most people would never even notice. Serve when nobody's going to. Last week I asked you to do something for somebody if you possibly could without even telling them about it. We're going to step it up this week, though. We'll get there in a minute. He was hidden. He didn't. They didn't see this coming. Often Jesus served in hidden things that they didn't even see. He was on the mountain praying for them. He was serving the halty. Here's Peter. Oh, Lord, you'll never wash my feet. After all, I'm Peter. I'm Simon. At this point, he was still Simon. You know, sometimes you got to serve those that seem a bit lifted up. And serve them anyway. And serve them like Jesus would. I don't know if the room grew quiet or not, if they just kept arguing until they realized what he was doing. If you study them, they probably kept on arguing for a while. And he begins to go around. He goes to each one of them. He got to Peter, and he was, of course, very haughty about it. Maybe he got to Thomas and a couple of them, and they were hushed about it. And they're like trying to figure out, what is he doing? Sometimes we need to serve the hushed. You know, I've often found some of the people in church, it seems like there are two types. There are those that heard a commentator the other day label it well when he said they are underdependent. They will not let you know of any need they have. Somebody the other day, one of my neighbors, I was talking to their son about it, and he said, yeah, he'll, or I think it was his nephew, he said, he'll help anybody in the world, but if he has a need, he won't tell nobody. I didn't know he'd been sick and in the hospital. Brother Don Lyons, I love Brother Don, and I don't know if he's still out of the hospital. He said, no guest. He wanted to just get recovered, and he was weak right now, but you could talk to him, and he's hurting so bad, and you'd never know it. Sometimes people won't tell you their need, and you just need to look for their need. If we look for their need, we won't see so much of their faults when we see what they need. We'll quit seeing all those faults that pop up. And here he is serving the hush. Some of the people in church, unfortunately, have the other attitude. They become over-dependent. They want you to do everything for them. Oh, great, you're going to do this? Well, do this and do this and do this. And you have to let them know, I'm not Jesus. I can't heal that for you. Sometimes there are people you have to say, I am sorry, I cannot fix that. I'm not God. Can't. And I can't fix those things, you know. And you understand that. There's both those and no happy medium sometimes. Sometimes we need to serve the hurting. Not only the haughty, the hush, the humble, but the hurting. There are people that are hurting that you may never know about. They may come to church and have a pretty smile on, or they may have a nice set of clothes on, or they may not even, but inside they're hurting. There are things that are going on you would never imagine in their life. You know, it's really easy to be a traditional Pharisee-type Christian. Let me explain that. Traditional Pharisee-type Christians today, they don't necessarily walk around in the robes and all that and have their phylacteries, but what they do is they have their list of rules. This is how I serve God. I sit in a padded pew. We have to have this in church. We have to have that in church for it to be church. Little of what we do is actually what would have looked like church in Jesus' day. And yet, when it comes down to it, what they're really doing is checking off the list. That's easy. God said, Jesus said, I want those people to serve me in spirit and in truth. It is a lot harder. Let me put it this way for you guys. Now, you ladies, just ignore me for a minute. Ask your wife where she wants to go to supper. Why'd y'all laugh? Or ask your wife, is it easier to just take your wife to supper? Or is it easier to really figure out what she wants to eat? The difference in traditional and really loving her is finding out what she really wants and trying to make it happen. The difference in just saying, well, I'm trying to be a good husband, is trying to figure out what she's really feeling. Now, I've been married 30 years. And I will tell you, the best marriage counsel I can give you is lover. In Jesus' name, and that's it. Yes, dear is not a bad idea either. And Wendy says, you don't do that very much. She told me that the other day. We were in the Grand Canyon, and we were down in the very bottom of a restaurant, and somebody found out we had been married 30 years, and that's what we were doing, was hiking down to the bottom for our anniversary. And this little girl and her mom, she's like, you know, maybe early 20s, 18, 19, something like that. They were hiking down together as a mother-daughter thing, and she said, well, I'm hoping to one day get married. Do you have any marriage advice after being married for that long? And I said, say several things. I love you. I'm sorry. Pray like crazy. She said, that's it. And I said, that's it. There's a couple across of us that had been married a long time too, and they said, yep, that's pretty much it. And he said, say yes, dear. Well, sometimes hurting people, they hurt people, but they're not going to tell you what they need. Sometimes you need to just find it and do it. Wouldn't it be great if the Church of Jesus Christ would actually get up and look around for people and people and their needs? You know what ministry is? Ministry is not a whole bunch of theological things. That has nothing to do with it. When we get to heaven, sanctification, justification, and how much we want to argue about Calvinism and Arminism is not going to be there. It's going to be over. But whether or not you love that person to Jesus is. And all of that stuff's not going to make a hill of beans, but what's going to be important is how we serve them. Look around, find those needs. And that's what's going to change their life. Serve humbly, serve the haughty, serve the hushed. I see our time is flying by, and I want to get to this one because this is probably the most difficult out of this morning, and I knew I'm still only halfway through this series, I think, so serve the hated. Just imagine as we're going around this room, here's Jesus. He's kneeled down before each one of them, and then he comes to the most liked individual by the disciples in the room. He kneels down with his towel before Judas. Now, I want you to really think about this. This man is going to be one of the most hated in the world. Jesus Christ knows, and even calls him friend, that this man is about to betray him to go through one of the most horrific deaths. And you serve in the horrific things as well. That he would ever experience, one of the most difficult things that he'd ever done in his life. And Jesus kneels down and begins to wipe the dirt off his feet. Can I tell you that lost people and Christians alike get dirty feet spiritually? If this was the average church, what would have happened if we were Jesus is we would have stood up and said, man, y'all's feet really stink. Maybe we'd have looked over at Peter and said, you get yourself out of here and you go clean your feet. And when you've got your feet clean, then you're welcome to come back. Or we'd have said, I really wish you wouldn't bring those dirty toes in here. Don't you have any pride whatsoever? Do you know what you're doing to Jesus? You stink. You see, ministry, and I started that thought, my ADHD kicked in and I left it and I'm coming back to it now. Coffee helps. That ministry is all about people. people have problems. Lots of them. So ministry, therefore, is ultimately people with problems, trying to help them with the problems. We would have said, go get that dirt off your feet. When you do that and you meet our standard, you can come back. We've all got dirt on our feet, and quite honestly, we're all pretty good at seeing dirt. It's easy to find a problem. It's a lot harder to become the solution. All of these other men in the room saw the problem. They knew the problem was there. They could smell it. They could see it. They could have touched it. But only one actually sat down and began to do something about it. And we as humans like to point out in everybody else. But can I tell you what we need to do? And I heard something this week that I absolutely loved, because it jumped out at me, it preached at me, it kind of hurt me. Until you are willing to get down with the towel and a basin of water and wash the dirt that you see on somebody's feet, keep your mouth shut and kneel down. You say, that's hard. I know it's hard. Hit me hard. Instead of talking about it, for years, Brother Billy's been teaching me this lesson. Something had come up that we were dealing with, and he'd say, we're not going to do nothing about it. I want you to pray about it. And for years, I thought he was putting people off. Just putting me off, you know. Well, just pray about it, you know. I found out through experience and through him and through many years is when you begin to pray about it, things that you thought would never possibly change, instead of you go do something about it, if you'll go pray about it for a few hours and a few weeks, even a few months, God can do way more than we can do. Amen. And all of a sudden, situations that I thought were impossible and would never be solved, I'm like, what? How'd this happen? I didn't think that person would ever change. Because we spend more time dirt inspecting than we do dirt removal. And when you look at this, Jesus is washing dirt off of the hated. Who do you not like? And don't start naming names. Don't look at your husband or wife, I hope. Good night. We're going to do marriage counseling right over here. We got boxing gloves. We all have them. Maybe nationally, internationally, movements, groups. But here Jesus is washing dirt off of mostly lost people's feet, kindly massaging them. He is washing the feet of one of the what would become the most hated, so he's washing the feet of the hated. And he is not in any way, you know, he's not pinching his toe as he washes it. Poking him a little bit. I mean, physically, could you wash the feet of one of the people you dislike? But now think about it. Spiritually. You see what it means, we wash feet, is we don't just look at the dirt, we say, man, I noticed that person's feet's dirty. I'm going to get down on my knees and pray, and then I'm going to get involved in their life and see how can I love this person to Jesus. These people bring a lot of baggage. Not everybody gets the chance to grow up like you do. And you may be here and you may be one of those people. Some people have very loving, kind homes and some people don't. Some people have moms and dads that love them. Then you have people like Miss Esther here who didn't even get to know her mother. And there are people in churches, in contact that you will come in that have way varied situations. And we see it very cut and dry. It's easy to be a cut and dry Christian, but what that makes you become is a traditional Pharisee. Because you're just checking your box. As long as I do this box, I'm okay. But when you really begin to pray and say, God, lead me, that's hard. As I said earlier, it's a whole lot hard to understand your wife's feelings than it is to just, you know, go down the list. Or your husband. I'm sure it works that way too. I don't remember what we were talking about. My wife the other day said, you guys are so weird sometimes. And I was like, well, maybe. But you serve the hush, you serve the haughty, you serve the hurt, and you serve hidden. But you serve the hated. And when the church of Jesus Christ decides that it's finally going to get up off of its pews and begin to really serve people, it's going to change our churches. There are going to be people in our churches that don't look right. Because we've been serving their needs. That's who I want in my Sunday school class. That's who I want in our Awanas. That's who I want to come to Judgment House. I remember when we began the Pregnancy Crisis Center down in Florida, we had a huge crisis issue down there with homelessness and teen pregnancies and a whole bunch of stuff. And we started one of those, and I warned our people. I said, we're going to get some girls in here that don't look exactly like you think. One of our later pastor friends, after I left that church, his wife wound up starting a ministry to nightclub women. It's the only polite way to say it. Many of them trusted Christ. But they would come in and this kills a lot of people. They had a different situation. Their fellowship hall and their church was all combined, so it was a little bit easier on the carpet and all that business. But on Wednesday night, they would have a meal an hour before just so they could get a good meal. Because a lot of those girls are not in that because they want to be. They're in that because they're addicted to something or they're forced. And so many of them would get a good meal. They would just love them. And I promise you, they didn't all come looking like you want them to come. They didn't smell right sometimes. I have a little drug odor on them. You say, well, I don't want my kids around that. Well, please don't go to Walmart. But the truth is, I'm only joking, the truth is, none of us do. None of us do. But if we're really going to serve Jesus, we have got to learn how to help wash feet and to teach our kids how to help wash feet. And if you teach your kids how to wash feet spiritually, they won't be affected by the dirt. They'll grow up loving Jesus and getting involved and wanting to help. So how are you this week going to serve the hated? And this is a subject I've been looking at for almost a year now. It just didn't pop up. A little over a year, really. I'd started doing some study in a school course I'm doing, and I read a book by Philip Yancey on the Jesus I Never Knew over a year ago, and it kicked this off, and I've really been pondering it for a long time now, and finally got liberty to preach it. But it just, what can you do this week to serve the hated? Let's just stand for a time of invitation. Get little LaVon to come, or maybe Miss Brenda just to maybe play something. Maybe Miss Brenda, I don't know, whatever y'all feel like if you need to do for the invitation. But if everybody would stand, I want to ask you to do something hard. The Bible says, and I'm looking up from my reference here, Matthew 20, 28, that Jesus came to seek and to serve that which was lost. But in Luke chapter 6 and verses 32, 34, let me just read that as they're getting that set up. Luke chapter 6, it says, let's do 32. If you love them which love you, what thank have ye? For sinners also love those that love them. If you do good to them that which do good to you, what thank have you? For sinners also do even the same. Go jump down to verse 35. Love your enemies and do good and lend and hope for nothing in return. Your reward shall be great and ye shall be the children of the highest. You know, in the passage we read, I found where Jesus said, told them to go and do likewise. And if you do, happy will you be. You depressed? You struggling as a Christian? Can't find meaning? Wash feet. You begin to wash feet, you'll find meaning in your Christian life. You'll have joy. Let's just have our heads bowed and our eyes closed for a little bit. And I want to ask you, if you want to come down and make a commitment to God, that'd be great. I don't know how many times God spoke to me at the altar. Would you be willing to maybe even come down this morning and say, God, bring somebody to mind that I don't like, and help me do something nice for them in the coming weeks? Maybe tell them, maybe don't. That's between you and God. Would you be willing to make that kind of commitment this morning? Would you be willing to say, I'm going to do that? Maybe you've got somebody you're praying for now and you know that things aren't right. How long have you prayed for them? How long have you cried out to God and said, God, they got dirt on their feet. Will you help them? Will you show me how I can help them? I know this is a hard message. It's hard for me. And I don't mind if you take a fault to it or offense to it. But I had to look at it hard and say, well, what would Jesus do? Maybe somebody's coming to mind right now. You just want to come and pray for and say, God, I pray you will show me how I can help wash the feet of somebody I don't even like.